Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time to come over and spend the afternoon. Well, it's late morning, not afternoon. The late morning with me here in the studio. And we're going to talk all things recruiting. The first question, and this has been burning literally since we were going to chat, is what are your thoughts on the term headhunter? Is that a negative thing? Is it a good thing? Because that's always how I've heard it in my terms when I was in the field was, oh, we have to hire a headhunter.
Right. You know what? When I got into recruiting, I didn't really know much about it, right? And that's, you know, part of my story. But I've never used the term headhunter. We really coined the phrase matchmaker at Source One Hospitality. And I think that's kind of part of my DNA now. And yeah, headhunter, I think it's an outdated term now.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's using it. Maybe more in like the C-suite, you know, in the executive level. But I think it's, I don't think it really represents what this process means anymore.
Okay, perfect. You started an Italian deli at 15, right? A lot of people have their first jobs, you know, and they forget about those type of things. Clearly you built the career around the hospitality industry. You know, what was it like working at the deli that, and what kept you around? Why did you stay into food, your fell into food kind of moment with that deli?
Yeah, you know, I was 15. I started working in an Italian deli. It was like super comfortable for me. I grew up in a big New York Italian family. So the food was comfortable. The people were comfortable. And it just really became something I loved instantly. And I just knew right away. I was like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And since I was so close to getting ready to go to college, I started looking at colleges for hospitality programs. It's funny because now there are so many options for student, you know, even doing ProStart, which I actually did do ProStart, but getting into ProStart in high school. And then you can go to a four-year college. You can go to a community college now. You can, you know, the options are endless for getting into the education portion of culinary and hospitality. But for me, back in 2004, I only had two options, and it was Kendall or Northern Illinois University. And I wanted to go to football games and go to kegs and eggs. So I chose
Northern.
Who doesn't
love some kegs and eggs in college?
You know, go Huskies. It was the best 4 years of my life. And that program launched me into my career. I was recruited right away out of college by Marriott. So I, you know, another reason I think getting into the educational piece of hospitality when you can is to have those connections. And it was a priority for the hospitality program for people to have jobs. And, you know, I think now that's more important than ever. But I'm still really involved with the hospitality program at NIU. It has grown tremendously. It's now part of the business school. And from there, from 7 years with Marriott International and then going into an independent restaurant and brewery in the suburbs. There was never another option for me.
You working at a job while in school is imperative. That was like one of the first things my chef said. He's like, you need to get a job. It doesn't matter. Cause I had no experience. I wasn't the 15-year-old that went into a restaurant.
Sure.
Now I worked at a gas station and we had a little like, I don't know, half-ass kitchen that had Broster Chicken and like Hunt's Brothers Pizza.
Those are the best spots.
Yeah. Right. And fun fact, did you know Hunt's Brothers Pizza is like the number one selling pizza in America that nobody knows about because it's the gas stations? Yeah, I saw the chart and I was like, that blows my mind. Fun fact for everybody. But that was a big deal, was get a job while you're in culinary school. How does that tie into also the network? We're going to jump right into that piece because in today's age, I feel like networking, there was a weird phase, in my opinion, where it was like, oh, go network. And it was kind of like this weird term. Like, what do you mean go network? And now it's kind of like, I feel like you have to do it. So what are your thoughts on networking in general? We can go social to in person to wherever you want to go.
Yeah. My network is my like most important aspect of my job and my life. And because I've always been so social, you know, I grew up in like the Northwest suburbs and went to school in DeKalb, which wasn't that far off. Then, you know, working for Marriott and then working in South Barrington at a really well-known restaurant and brewery. Like, I've just always had a huge network, and getting into this job, it made me so successful so quickly. And now as I'm getting ready for year five and the network that I've built even from then, I always say to like my candidates and my clients and anyone I'm talking to, this hospitality industry is literally like the biggest industry in the smallest world. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are all separated by 1 degree, if that even, you know, in Chicago, it's like even tighter. I can't say enough what like building your network, you know, whether you're building it on LinkedIn or you're going to some events. I think it's a combination of everything. You know, people ask me that a lot. You know, I spend time working on social media, making sure people see that I'm consistently posting so that they think of me when they, you know, are thinking about getting a job. I try to go to events like restaurant show. I try to go to lots of restaurant openings. I try to be supportive to my clients and my candidates. I'm also just kind of that social person in general with my friends and everyone in my community, with the kids, my husband. And I think people see that, but they also see that I'm genuine about it. You know, when I'm engaging with people at an event or at a restaurant or, you know, at the soccer field, like, you know, there's a way to do it. You know, you really want to be intentional. You really want to listen, which is a skill that I think you really learn how to do. You know, I'm, you know, getting to almost 40. And I think listening has become something that I'm still learning about, right? Because you can sit there and hear someone, but you really like listening to what they're saying and really understanding what their message is. So your network is your most powerful tool. And sometimes people will call me, they're like, you know, I'm done with this job. I'm ready to go. I want to do something new. I tell people, just pen and paper, sit down, write down your network, write down like people that have like really been an influence on you, write down people that you've met and are like, man, I'd love to work with her or him, or write down somebody that was like, hey, if you ever need anything, reach out. And you'll be surprised like what you've done. But yeah, it's never too early, and there's never a waste of putting a lot of effort into your network.
And don't be afraid to ask people. I find it feels almost grimy, like I'm going to ask this person for a favor, or I'm going to ask them to recommend, you know, make a connection.
Right.
And in reality, most people want to, in this industry, they want to help others.
Absolutely.
It doesn't feel like, I've asked people and they're like, absolutely. Let me hook you up with so-and-so and make this connection. I'm like, oh, I was not expecting
because
that.
Because we do it, right? Like if somebody comes to you, and that's what I always tell my candidates, like you think about it, like if somebody came to you, you would do that immediately. And that's a big part of our culture just in the industry in general. But I agree, it's imperative that, you know, you're working on your network and you're being a person that can not only be supportive to others, but then, yeah, ask for the support when you need it. That's why you built it.
But how does one start their network? They're young. They're getting in the industry. I mean, whether they've been in it or not, and they've worked at one place, you know, through their teen years, you know, now they're trying to take it more seriously. They're in their 20s. They're trying to work their way. Like, how do they start to build that network? I see usually, because I'm on LinkedIn a lot like you, I see one extreme or the other. They're there all the time. They're always engaging, or they have a profile, but
there's nothing.
But there's nothing. It's just crickets. It's like, how do you build the network starting out in a way that keep track? You can only remember so many people,
right?
There's only so many ways. Whereas if you use a social media platform or something to kind of, I don't know, I use it almost as like a CRM, right? It's holding all the people. It's got all the conversations I've ever had with them. So it's very easy to just type in their name. Who are you? And what did I talk about?
Right.
What company did you work at? It's a little more laid out than, you know, you go to Instagram. I mean, good luck trying to find out what somebody's done or who they are. So what's your kind of advice for someone just wanting to build that network right out the gate?
Yeah, I think what would really be impactful for somebody that's starting out is yes, making those connections on LinkedIn, but it's not just about like reaching out and like making a connection on LinkedIn. It's having meaningful conversation and dialogue. So sending someone a message and saying, hey, this is where I'm at with things. And, you know, I'd love to keep in touch, and then actually do it. You know, if you are interested in a company or getting to work with someone in the future, you know, it's okay to send somebody a message on LinkedIn or ask for their emails and follow up in a couple months. I think that's really where people probably fall off is, okay, well, I made the connection. It's like, okay, but what are you doing to work at that connection? And does that person know that you have a goal to end up here? And I think there's a lot, you know, because we're in this digital age and now everything is, you know, really based on the computers. But if you can go to some network, I mean, we have a lot of great networking events just for the industry and just for professionals in our mm-hmm. city and in the suburbs. So I would highly recommend, you know, getting out there and talking to people and meeting people. I mean, sometimes people are surprised when I say, hey, if you really want a job, print out your resume and go there and drop it off. Say, hey, you know what? I saw this job posted. Would you mind passing this on to the HR director or whoever's doing the hiring? Why not? Like, you really want to show that you are committed to something and you really feel strongly that you're a fit for something. You know, who's going to turn you away from dropping off a piece of paper like we used to?
Especially now, because I had a question about that specific. You log into Indeed, you log into wherever, yeah. and you're looking for a job, and it just feels like 100 people are applying, 500 people are applying. You don't want to do it. You're like, okay, well, 500 people, there's probably one out of those 500 that's more qualified than I am. But from like a recruiter's perspective, how does one get set up when they're searching for a job? I feel a resume nowadays, unless you've done some of the big names and you've staged at places that have some holdings, people are like, oh, okay, if they work there, they probably have some chops. Because AI can write anything for anybody.
Right.
Anyone can, I feel like, can BS their way through a resume now. It's pretty easy to just type in, hey, I want it to look like this and blah, blah, blah. How does a recruiter looking at that, how does someone, should you have a resume? What is your resume? Is a resume still the piece of paper? Is the best way to just go in person and just drop it off? What if you're looking to go across country? Like, what are those tactics? How do you even get started in today's age to start looking for a job?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a great thing about utilizing a recruiter in general, right? If I think a lot of people might have some misunderstandings about what it's like to partner with a recruiter and that it has no cost to you as a candidate typically, unless you're probably at an executive level. But for any executive chef, director of operations, sous chef, management level, you know, there is no cost to you to work with a recruiter. And there are plenty of companies out there, you know, and what's a misconception is that. And, you know, it's not even a misconception, but what happens a lot with recruiters is people feel like they get ghosted or there's not really great dialogue or communication. Or, you know, I had a chef call me on the way here and he's like, you know, this recruiter said he sent me here. I don't even know where here is. And, you know, that is definitely not how I do things or Source One does things. So using a recruiter can really allow you direct access to the hiring managers. You know, I work directly with my clients on hires because guess what? They're just as overwhelmed with all those postings. They put something on Culinary Agents and they got 50 applications and they're like, whoa, I don't want to deal with this either. So they rely on their partners, their recruiting partners, to be like, hey, who are the best five candidates for this job? You guys know me. You know what I'm looking for. You know this culture. You know what we need to do here. Let me see the five best people. And it really is a time saver and eventually a money saver for everybody, you know, finding those candidates. So working with a recruiter, yes, we don't have access to every job that's out there, but the connections are invaluable. And we're able to, you know, I always say on my calls when I'm getting introduced to people, I said, you know, think of me as like a sports agent. Like, okay, you know, you're LeBron James and I'm your agent and I'm looking for the next best team, best coach, best pay, best culture. And I'm going to represent you to the clients and make sure that these all check the boxes for you just as much as they check for them. So working with a recruiter can just really provide some direct correlation right to the clients. Because I mean, I can text somebody and say, hey, I got this person and they're amazing and you have to meet them. And that's where the people matching comes in too, because you could see a great post online, but what does that really say about the culture and
right.
And the person who's hiring, right? Like, especially for chefs, I've learned this is a people match more than anything. You know, working in the kitchens is, you know, one of the hardest jobs anybody will ever have. You know, and in our industry, the heart of the house is the men and women that work in the kitchen. And you better be damn sure you like who you're going to work with and you respect that chef that you're going to report to and that you can build a team and you can provide something really special for the guests. So, you know, it's always a people match for me, but in the kitchen, it's just absolutely essential that, you know, you're
spot on.
Yeah.
100%. Me being in operations when I was a GM of, you know, again, colleges, I mean, you have a lot of management and a lot of layers. It was about a people fit. Some of these guys, gals that I hired, I'm like, they probably aren't the most qualified, skilled, but their people skills are really good and they right. can connect with the team and what they lack there. You know, me having culinary background, I was like, oh, I can teach them
right.
the little bits in here of this niche of the higher ed sector. So you're so spot on. Cause yeah. I would go through chef after chef after chef. And then I realized it's not about their skills. They work no. hard, they grind, but they're an asshole to their team. Then the team doesn't want to work. And when you're trying to feed thousands and thousands, you need your team of 80 to perform at a high level to put out that food. So spot on. So would you say it's the secret sauce to find a recruiter and work with a recruiter? If you're looking for a job, like find.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about recruiting agencies, so like Source One Hospitality, we specialize in hospitality, food and beverage. You know, we don't really dabble in other industries because we're all former operators. This is where we have passion. This is where we've lived. We've been in everybody's shoes of what you're doing. And I think that makes us just, you know, it allows us to really make the best matches possible. And for our clients, right? Like we do get paid for by the clients, right? So we have a client to take care of here. And as much as the candidates are equally as important to us, we got to make sure we're performing for the mm-hmm. for the clients. And there are recruiters in every industry at every level, but I think it's a leg up when you're working with a recruiter for looking for a job. And, you know, honestly, there's probably a lot of misconceptions about working with a recruiter as a client. And, you know, here in Chicago, we work with some of the most amazing groups, and they're are huge groups, and there are groups with two restaurants, and there are hotels, and there are, you know, we work with every size, and the value of that, I think, you know, we've done some numbers that and some research that, you know, when you work with a recruiter on hiring, specifically with Source One Hospitality, our candidates have 10 years, probably 30% more than longer than the average. And that's because we're taking the time to make sure this is a fit from all angles, right? The skills, the people, the personality, the culture. And, you know, is this person coming on board and adding value, you know, where you're needing it? Because these are crucial hires. You know, you're hiring an executive chef of, you know, opening your third restaurant and you guys are the hot thing in Chicago. This, you know, the pressure's on. And it gets to be, you know, like we're talking about with the postings and stuff. It's overwhelming on everybody's side with all of these. I wouldn't discourage you from applying to jobs online. I think it's always best to go directly to the company. Like when you're working with a recruiter, they'll present you. But if you're just like, hey, I really do want to, you know, apply for this job, go to their website directly. Okay. I think there's, you know, culinary agents is great, but the job's always on there for the company. So you can always figure out who that is. And then to talk about moving cross country, definitely work with a recruiter because it's like, no, I'm, and it's hard to say, but even people wanting to come to Chicago, we have a problem here with Chicago that we don't really want to talk to anybody outside of Chicago. And, you know, we're not a market that's really accepting of talent, like just applying. But if you can work somebody to get, I know it seems weird, but like Nashville, Dallas, like all these secondary markets, they want the talent from other markets. Chicago, we're kind of like, we're good.
I feel like we're a little pretentious, right? You've got New York, you've got Chicago, you've got LA, and it's kind of like, we're the Meccas. Like, we have our own talent.
It's interesting. I've probably only reload one person in my 5 years to Chicago, which is, you know, pretty significant considering when we work with Texas, Florida, Nashville, some of the growing markets. So I would say it'd be really essential if you're really looking to move somewhere, because you need to know about these companies just as much as they need to know about you. You know, you're moving somewhere new. This is going to be a huge opportunity to make sure that you're getting in with the right group for you.
Yeah. How do you work with those candidates and companies, like, to build the relationships, to find out what they want, right? A new client comes to you and says, hey, we're going to need people. You've never worked with them before. They're a five chain restaurant. They've got five locations. What is that process? How do you get to know them? Obviously, they're in a crucial. They need to hire somebody. Time is a factor.
Yeah.
What's that process look like?
Yeah. So even before I'm ever interacting with like a client, whether it's, you know, really lucky for us at Source One, and I guess not luck because it's what we build at and we've worked at, but most of our clients are word of mouth referrals, you know, or a candidate who we've placed before now works at a new company, somebody from another company moves over, even in all the other markets, you know, these are all word of mouth and, you know, just referrals. So we're really thankful for that business. But before I ever talk to anybody, I mean, I've done my homework, you know, on the company. I know who the key players are. I know what you're doing. I know where you're building. And we also, you know, we really come to them just like we're talking about here. Like, this is we're grassroots recruiters. We're not using ads. We're not using AI. We're having conversations with people. We're vetting them thoroughly to see where their potential is for your, if it's with your company or with not. And then, you know, once we get with them, it's normal dialogue. You know, I think getting into this job, I thought like clients would be the scary part. It's the best part, you know, because we're getting on with operators who are growing or doing something exciting. And they're like, okay, this is what we need. You know, this is really going to fit. And from there, you know, it's never really rocket science. You know, once you really get to know, okay, this is, and we know a lot about all of our clients and who's been successful and who hasn't. We have a huge track record here in Chicago and some of the other markets, but it's dialogue. And we get the most, our most like productive relationships with clients are the ones that put in just as much effort as us. Mm. You know, we have some clients that might just be like, okay, we need a culinary director. And you're like, okay, like,
what does that mean?
And what are they, you know? And then you have other clients and, you know, they give us so much information that it's like, okay, I got that person. And, you know, we're having a lot of dialogue all the time. And it's through the process, right? You know, when I'm working with a client, if they're like, you know, hey, we got to pivot. We thought we needed this. We've met some of these people. That's not really what we need. Let's do this now. So it's just constant dialogue. It's constant communication, feedback. There's a lot of no's, you know, in recruiting. I don't think people really get that. Most of the day is no. Most of the day is no. And it's hard because I think people see like, oh, you know, you're a recruiter, you work from wherever you want, you know, you work from home, you know, and it's like, yeah, no, I do have a really great job with flexibility for schedules and for where I'm working and what I'm doing. But yeah, it's a lot of no all day. It's a lot of sales.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's sales. Literally sales. Just with people.
It's people, you know, there's no from the, you know, oh, I'm gonna talk to this great, you know, director of ops today. And then it's like, oh, you know what? I just took a job. Oh, it's a no. Okay. And then, you know, you're sending a great candidate to a client. Oh, we actually just made the hire yesterday. Oh, okay. Now I got to tell you, you know, a lot of no's. But when the yeses happen and the hires happen, it's life changing. You know, we impact people's lives. And that's why I've never had a Sunday scary or never wanted to get up for work in the morning, because I know how impactful I can be to help people, especially in restaurants and hospitality where you're grinding and this needs to be somewhere you like to go to and people you like to be with. And I want to help people in our industry as much as I can because our industry needs it.
We do need it, because going back to what I said earlier is I feel like it's all, you see all these job postings, but then you see all these applicants applying, but then there's still the job open. And you're just like, wait.
Right.
Why is this not being filled?
And then it gets reposted.
And then it gets reposted. And you're like, okay, well.
And it still has 500 people.
Right. Exactly. It feels like this infinite loop of like, we're trying to find people. We can't find people. Like, it just never, I don't know. It feels weird that there's a labor problem, you know, obviously on the lower level. We all know that. But even at the executive level, it feels like places are always constantly churning and burning. What are your thoughts on tenure of stay? you know, are you looking at like how old somebody is? Like, are you finding out, okay, here's what they're planning on doing. They only want to go somewhere for a couple years. Are clients accepting of that? I know the old nomenclature was, I had one client where I brought in an assistant director and they're like, do they plan on staying at least 5 years? I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you yes.
Yeah.
Because I don't want you to say no, because I really want this candidate. But realistically, like, probably not. If there's a better opportunity, like, they're going to want to grow and continue. And if that's not here, they're going to leave. So I guess the question is, has the client's point of view changed on length of stay? And how do you guys approach that? I mean, again, it's the culinary industry.
People, I mean, tenures are definitely something to be noted on resumes. But in our industry, you said it, like, there's a lot of times where you can be somewhere for 2 to 3 years and you don't have an opportunity to move up, or, and not that even your direct reports don't want to give you that. Sometimes it's just not an option, right? You've done what you've done there. And in our industry, more, you know, it's interesting seeing like other industries like financials and, you know, people that are in insurance, like they stay forever, you know, they stay
40, 50 years.
Like, I mean, still, like, you know, my husband's worked for Liberty Mutual for 14 years and he's a happy guy and we are Team Doug and Limu Emu all the way. But in our industry, that's not a reality.
Right.
I do, on the hotel side, you will see much longer tenures. And there's a lot to be said for that because there's a lot more benefits and a lot more growth. But in the restaurant groups, like, you know, I you don't want to see people jumping around, but you also, there's always a story. There's always a story behind a resume. And as you get to know some of the groups and the restaurants and the places that you're recruiting in, you can understand why, you know, people have come and gone. But, you know, you would love to see people be somewhere 2 to 3 years, but it's just not always the reality. And forget like 2020 to 2022, 23, that doesn't count on anybody's resume. But you know, you still want to show what you were doing during that time. If you weren't, you know, if you weren't doing carry out at a restaurant and, you know, you were doing something else, you know, you want to show that. But yeah, the tenures are, you'd like to see them, but in all reality.
Yeah. What about the statistic of the whole, you know, you have a better chance of higher pay throughout your career if you change every 2 to 3 years versus that long tenured person? I know that I've seen a little bit throughout my career before I went on my own of like, hey, I've been here for this long and this person just came on and they're making at what I'm making or less.
Right.
What do you
doesn't allow for that. Our industry doesn't allow people to stay with companies. Most companies, I mean, we do have the bigger groups that you can do that. But yeah, if you want to get to that next level, sometimes you have to go. You have to go to a new group. You have to. Otherwise, it's what, 2 to 3% every year.
And
we're not even increasing PTO. I mean, the benefit, that's a whole conversation of our industry and benefits. But yeah, you have to pick up and go most of the time and no one's looking out for you except for yourself with that. You know, so yeah, I do think that. That's, you know, and salaries, it's probably another really frustrating thing for people right now in our industry. I mean, especially in Chicago, you're looking at salaries and you're like, what is going on? Like, our salaries have compressed in a really dramatic way over the past year or two, you know, and that's, you know, a product of everything that's happening. But everything that's happening in a restaurant with costs is happening to you at home. So how are these salaries getting lower? And, you know, it's frustrating. But yeah, I do think that a lot of the times you don't have a choice. You know, there are certain companies that will allow you to have the growth, and that means financially and in a position. But a lot of the times you got to move on. Yeah,
they're far and few between finding those places. I was going to ask you about the wages in general, because I've looked at, you see them pop up and you're like, $60,000 to run an operation? Like, who's surviving in the Chicago market, even in the suburbs? You got to live in the slums.
Yeah.
Survive off of that. Like, realistically,
yeah.
I just filled up my car. It was $75.
Right.
I about had a heart attack. I was like, oh my God, $75? And if you've got to drive because you're so far out, right? Unless you're living in the city, you know, really close to where you're at, and you're taking public transportation, even then it's difficult.
Still at home, like everything that's affecting the restaurants, you know, the food costs and, you know, everything in life is affecting you too. And, you know, as hard it is to keep great profits or any profits at a restaurant. Right now it's impossible. And there's so many things working against us. But yeah, like we're going the wrong way with salary and benefits. You know, there's still so many groups in Chicago that can't even, you know, offer health insurance to their management employees. And, you know, I have people reach out all the time and they're like, you know, I'm a lead bartender. I'm a lead line cook. And, you know, you don't want to know what they make compared to salary managers. I'm like, you got to stay where you are to make that money. Because our salary managers just, you know, we're not taking care of them as much as we probably should.
What do you think the fix is?
I mean, I wish I knew. I mean, I think that in general, benefits, I think, would be a huge impact to a lot of people. But I also get it from the business standpoint. It's not cheap to provide these things. And, you know, our city and our state and our country isn't making it easy to help small businesses provide for their people. So there's a long way to go on all that. But, you know, I even think some of the groups are getting really creative. You know, some of my clients have come up with some creative ways that maybe don't cost a lot of money. You know, a lot of them are helping with like a cell phone stipend or, you know, maybe a gym membership. There's a lot of the groups are now doing some wellness like stipends as part of the salary, like no matter what. And this is like something that you could go maybe buy like a piece of, you know, gym or like a, you know, like a treadmill at home, or you can use it to maybe use towards, you know, therapy. There's things like that. You know, some groups can pull off a 4-day work week. And yeah, maybe you're working 10, 12 hours, but we all know how that is, you know, having the actual day. We still have groups that need to let people have 2 days off a week and let them have those 2 days off. I think groups that, you know, that was a big issue for me in the restaurant, you know, operations world was you're never clocked out. You know, you could be off on a Sunday or a Monday, but
you're never
the
off.
Restaurant's calling, you're never, you know, off. Nonstop. You know, you're never really clocked out, you know. So if we can find a way to let people, especially now that we can do meetings online, you know, like, and you never get a break.
No.
So there's never a time for somebody to go home and just decompress and it doesn't allow them to come back to work to be the best.
Yeah,
employee.
Mentally it just messes with you.
When and we all have lives.
24/7 your phone is like on and you're just waiting for an email and then you almost get demonized if you don't respond to it within like 10 minutes and then you get a phone call and it's like, it's the weekend. I'm out at the zoo with my family. And they're like, well, we have an emergency. And it's like, figure it out. Yeah. I'm not there. That's why there's other people in charge when I'm not there and it just doesn't get done. And I think it does play a toll. Benefits, mental health, all those things add up real quick. I know, again, just going on my own, it's like chop my left arm off just to provide health coverage for my family. And it's a lower quality. I can't have the same quality that I had when I worked for a big company that could provide something. And people just don't understand that really starts to eat away at what you're bringing in every day.
Yeah.
Again, even a cell phone stipend, I mean, 50 bucks, 60 bucks.
Can help.
It helps every little bit. And I know companies, there's ways to tax write it off. But your point, we've just got to fix the insurance thing. I think if that was fixed and people could actually have affordable health insurance, I think you could get away with those lower wages because you're providing. I know when I worked for Harrah's.
Yeah.
So that was, I don't know who they were. Yeah, it was just Harrah's. My health insurance was like, I was single at the time, but it was like $40 a month.
Yeah.
And I at the time, I don't think I comprehended what that meant because I was like, I'm healthy. I'm single. Like, what does it matter? I'm like, I got to pay $40 for health insurance. And now I look back, I'm like, 40, even if I had a family and it was 250, I would have been, I'd be elated. But it's not where it is anymore unless you work for a mega corporation. Yeah. But to your point, you potentially sacrifice growth, development, depending on what position you're in, et cetera. There's just a lot of, I don't know. There's a lot of...
We have a lot. We've come far, but we have a really long way to go on as an industry for that, especially in the independent restaurant scene.
Yeah. You mentioned to me that you talked about the impossible balance of being a mom in operations, right? Work is good, home suffers. Home is good, work suffers. Like, what's the solution? You hear work-life balance, you hear this magical term, and it's bullshit.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on it?
You know, I was really fortunate to work at an independent restaurant when I did have my kids, and I had a lot of support. And, you know, I think it was more me putting the pressure on myself than anything, right? And like you said, like I did, if you didn't answer the call, you know, I was like, oh, does, you know, is Nicole really care? Like, what is she doing? Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone thought that, but I thought that, right? And I had, especially being a woman, and at that point I was like a general manager of a restaurant and brewery, and it was like, you know, I wasn't able to turn it off ever. And it really affected things at home, you know? And, you know, being a parent, now fast forward, my kids are, you know, 8 and 10. You never get that time back, you know, to be with yeah. little kids and be a mom like that. And, you know, I that's another area, you know, our industry really needs to figure out. Like, most women who have kids don't work in hospitality operations because they can't. Yeah, it's impossible. And, you know, we can't even really help people with a paid maternity leave most of the time, you know? So it's like, I don't know what the solutions are there, but there's a lot of great talented women that are missing out on being in this industry because it's impossible. And we can't do it for them. And I feel really, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I love my job. I have the best job in the world. And part of that is because I get to be at home with my kids at soccer on Saturday mornings, where normally I'd be at a restaurant working. And, you know, you just never get that time back. So, and I think, a lot, you know, the mom, especially for female chefs, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of like stigmatism with that. Like, if you're a mom and you're not in the kitchen, and, you know, I really think that we could do a better job supporting women in the kitchen and just in operations in general. But yeah, it's a long way to go on that one too.
Yeah. It was always male dominated. It still
is. Yeah, it's
is.
A boys club. I mean, being in hospitality, you definitely feel like, you know, you can be in a big boys club a lot of the time, and you want to prove yourself. And, you know, I went through that for sure, tried to like show my worth. And, you know, I, even looking back at it, there's decisions I made that I probably wouldn't make again, you know, now, but it's kind of what you had to do, right? If you wanted to be in and accepted and you wanted to show that you could do it. And I think our age group is, we're kind of the last of that. Like, you went to work and you didn't leave till the job was done. Yep. And even when the job was done, yep. you might not have still left because there was still someone there. And you're like, no, you know what? I'm going to show everybody I'm here. And I think that had a big play on it, too, is just our work ethic, you know, the way that we came into this industry.
Oh, you know,
60, 70 hours was like nothing when we started.
You're like, you know? What do you mean? You're like, yeah, I'm getting in at 5. I'm leaving at 5, 6, 7. Yeah. Like, what's the big
and
deal?
We loved it.
And people are like, what do you mean? What's the big deal? They're like, you work 12 hours? I'm like, yeah. What do you mean you close open? Like, what, yeah. is that, what does that term even mean? I'm like, I closed last night and I came in this morning to cover the prep shift in the morning. And they're like, why would you do that? I'm like, oh, that's just what you do.
That's what we did.
It just felt like you had. Almost like you had to, otherwise, to your point,
yeah.
you'd be ostracized by the group. Yeah. Even though I worked for a big company at that time, yeah. it was like the group there was like, oh, they're not putting in their, they're putting in. But then you develop that mentality
exactly.
of the new
and
person coming in.
And that's probably what affected me becoming a mom was like, no, I'm the one that's always, you know, I'm there. I'm the person that everybody can count on. And, but, you know, it's okay to go home and, you know, turn it off. You
it's okay.
To.
It's okay
you
to say to. No.
And it's okay to say no.
I it took me a long time to say no.
Yeah.
Like very, very hard. I wouldn't say I'm a people pleaser, but I've always felt a lot of value and worth through like doing a good job. My employer says I'm doing good. That it was like my that was myself. That was like my self esteem. Like,
yeah.
okay, I've done a good job, so that must mean I'm a good person. And then I think it was the kids thing that changed the whole thing. And I was like, well, for what? I'm missing this or that
right.
party or whatever it is, so I can go cover the kitchen for what? Like,
yeah.
And then you cover said shift or I was doing whatever and it didn't even matter. I was like, if I wasn't here, it wouldn't have mattered.
Right. And there's always going to be a fire to put out.
There's always a fire to put out. But yeah, learn to say no. Cause that's.
Yeah. Learn to say no. That's exactly. And I'm sure people in their 20s are just getting into this. They're like, I mean, they have a different mentality than we did, but yeah, we're all people pleasers, right? That's why we're in this industry. We want to like make people happy and give them an experience. And we're also very loyal to our teams, right? And that's always been a big thing for me. I don't want to let like my team down,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they, or my team needs me. So, you know, that's always been.
I learned that the hard way too. Yeah. I would put in all the extra stuff, be like, my team, my team, my team.
Yeah.
And then when I needed something, I just, not that it was the team, but it was everything. I get shit on. I was like, all right, this, it's the nomenclature, you know,
yeah,
it's your family. I'm not saying there aren't places that are good and that you feel like family, but to be honest, you got to look out for yourself.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm not saying that you can't play nice in the kitchen.
Yeah,
you
be
can't
a team player.
You be friend, like friendly in the workplace environment, but don't bank on that person, you know, thinking you're going to have their back. Oh, hey, this happened. Can you, and they say no. Can't get mad at them. Like, they're looking out for themselves.
Right.
So you've got to learn to put up boundaries. Boundaries are, for us,
boundaries, yeah,
are the hardest thing.
And that's something I'm still working on, making boundaries, and when it comes to work and personal life. And yeah.
So someone that's working long hours, they like the kitchen. What, in your professional opinion, is a way, like a path to management? I always would work with like people, you know, cashiers, cooks, and I'm like, hey, here's your progression. But once you start to hit that like echelon, right, those, yeah, sous chef positions, and we're talking more of the higher echelon, like what should someone keep doing or not keep doing to like keep going? Because I feel like sometimes you get like stagnant and you just don't know how to break through to the next level. I was at that point for a while, and it took me leaving and then having a set of balls to kind of like,
right,
stand up for myself. But what would you say to those type people looking?
Yeah, that's the first thing is like, make it known to whoever is, you know, your person at work, right? Who's your person in the kitchen, or who's your person in the restaurant, right? You're like, listen, you know, but also like, make sure the timing's appropriate, right? If you've been at a restaurant for 4 months or you've been in a kitchen, this is not the time, right? I try to explain to people. I said, listen, I know we all think but go in there and be humble and learn. You know, go into a kitchen for a year, year and a half. Don't ask about what the next step is for you. Master what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then you know what? It's probably going to come that way. But I think it's something I always tell people is, you know, even a lot of chefs lately have been like, I'm really interested in learning front of the house. I'm interested in learning because the chef and B has become like more of a role. And I'm like, are you sure? But all right. But you could do that when you're already working in a place and you know everybody. You could say, but it might be extra time, right? Like, you might have to come in on a day off and be like, hey, can I shadow the front of the house manager for the day? But guess what? That's not on your schedule. That's you taking an initiative to come do that on your own time. But I think having a mentor is all, I mean, the chefs here in Chicago, everybody's got their mentors. Everybody's got the people that inspire them, the people that have helped them. And I think having continuing dialogue with your mentors and letting them know what your goals are, but be realistic, you know, like, if I post a culinary director job on LinkedIn and a sous chef of a year reaches out to me, which they do all the time, it's like that I like that you're shooting for the stars, but where are you just going to go? What's that path to get to there? And that's what we'll talk about too. And sometimes that's a hard part of my job. I had to tell people like, this, you're not qualified for this.
Yeah.
Or you're not even close to being qualified for this. Or I love that you're ambitious for that salary, but that's not a reality.
But you guys actually give them like legit, like real reasons, not just, yeah, thanks for applying, but we're not picking you.
Correct. Yeah, but that's what a lot of people are getting, right?
So right. That, I just say that because, yeah, there was a time where I had applied for a spot at a Google campus.
Yeah.
Like, it was a pretty big job, but I was like, I think I've done a lot. I've shown that I can manage systems and large people. And then just was back was like, thanks for applying.
We'll be in touch.
We'll be in touch, or you're not qualified.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know what I'm not qualified for so I can work on that. I can gain those skills for what you are looking for. And it just, because I was looking.
And most of the times, especially with chefs, like I can kind of work with them to be like, okay, let's talk about like what your day is, right? Like what are things that you do every day? And they're like, oh, you know, I make schedules. I'm starting to learn inventory. And it's like, great. Okay, here are the things that I want you to learn now. And then, yeah, those are great things to go in the kitchen and be like, hey, chef, you know, I'd really like to learn this as you're, you know, as we're going through this. And yeah, those are, you got to master all the skills, you know, and you have to be, you have to be a reliable, I mean, hey, you got to show up every day.
Yeah.
You got to show up when you're scheduled. You got to show up every day, and you can't cause a scene, which I know that sounds really like dumbed down, but if we could have more chefs and sous chefs and cooks like that, I mean, there'd be a lot less issues, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of personalities in the kitchen that cause ruckus and chaos for zero reason. And it's like, why are we?
Come to work, leave. Everybody's got their stuff, right? Everybody's got their stuff. You know, not that your leaders aren't going to empathize with you and care about what's going on, but come in and work, you know.
Right. There's a difference between empathy and sympathy. I feel like too many employees want you to feel sorry for them.
I feel like now more than ever, it's like work life is now life work, right? Like, you know, we come from the work life balance, but now this generation's a lot of it is life work. And they have some points there, but also when you're in the job, do the job. Like, you're here to work, work.
Well, and if you don't want to be in this industry, there's other places you can go and work, right? There are certain things in certain industries that just require certain skill set, a certain mentality, a certain dependability. Like you have to show up. There are other places where it may not be as big of a deal, where, you know, factory per se, and they've got 1,000 other people and you're not there. Okay. Well, somebody's going to pick up the slack, or maybe production slows down for whatever, you know, time period. But I like the cross training thing you said, because I found that was huge. We teach our teams that.
Right.
We say, hey, you should learn this station, and I want you to learn a little bit about what I do. But then when we sometimes you're in that management position, like as a chef in the back of house, we're just like, nah, it's front of house, like the hard line, no. And I learned the opposite. Like, when I became a GM, it was so much easier to become a GM of a property when I was like, no, I understand how to run the business and I know how the front works, but I can also manage the back because I know what should and shouldn't be doing.
Yes.
And they're just like, wait, what? And I was like, it was so much easier because I could actually spend more time on the front of the house because I knew exactly how the kitchen should run.
And I was the flip. So I got into the kitchen. Like, forever, I was like the girl that ran into the kitchen with her BEO, put her boards up, and was like, please, no one asked me to run food. And then when COVID hit and everything went crazy, I was like, this is my time to get in the kitchen and learn everything. And, you know, after that, I was like, you couldn't get me out of the kitchen. Couldn't get me out of the kitchen because that was my team. That was like where I was comfortable. I could control. I felt like I could control the restaurant from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't have to deal with the servers, so that was great. But and it also, all that time I spent in the kitchen, like, led me to here to be able to talk to chefs and be like, okay,
you have a perspective of understanding what that position. Yeah. Not that you were the executive chef, but you understood what that position took to do it, because you were around it. Just being around
it is
enough.
And I already knew the front of the house, so it was easy. It was like, okay, I already know how all this works. Now I know this, and now I'm unstoppable. Like, same thing. But it took me putting in the extra time, extra effort, asking. You have to ask. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody, as much as you have mentors and people that want to see you be successful, like, you're in charge of your own path here. You need to make it known. And don't be obnoxious or annoying about it, but yeah, like, this is why when you have reviews, you know, you come prepared and say, yeah, you know what, I'm really interested in learning how to do the costing and the inventory, and I'd love to maybe put up a dish for a special, you know, sometime soon. And yeah, but you're gonna have to put in the work. No one's gonna hand it to you, and no one's gonna just come up with it for you.
Yeah, I had them in when I was kind of a mentor to a guy. He was front of house, didn't know much back house. And he's like, man, I want to learn the kitchen. I was like, okay, when you're ready, you come find me when I'm ordering, when I'm going through and doing the orders and I'm doing stuff in the kitchen, come find me and make it a point to do this on a regular basis. And I will teach you. And until you do that, you know, we'll keep business as usual. And I don't remember how it was, like, 2 weeks went by and he's like, when are you going to show me stuff in the kitchen? I go, when you're ready. And that's all I'd say to him. That's all I'd say to him from that point on. And then just out of the blue, it was like a month, month and a half later, he finally comes back and he's like, you're getting ready to order? Because I was like clockwork. Like,
yeah.
2 o'clock hits or 1 o'clock hits. Jeff goes, he starts doing his walk. He sits down by 2 o'clock to place the orders. You know, I was regimen. Like clockwork. People hear my phone. They're like, oh, he's going to do this. Oh, he's going to do that. And he came and I said, and he's like, nope, you're teaching me today. And I was like, come walk with me. Right. And I was like, okay, he's ready. Because until you flip that mental switch of, like, you're ready to actually learn, you can say it all day long of, I want to learn. No, when you want to learn, you're going to put your ass in a position to learn. And most people, to your point, will then take that and say, okay, they're ready to learn. Because I had mentored so many people and they would always say, don't know. It felt like just a giant waste of time. I'd be like, you want to go to cook to a sous chef. Okay, this is what I need from you every day. Show up on time.
Yeah.
I want your sandy bucket changed out every 2 hours. I want you to be able to show me that it's changed out. Like, those are the only two things. Couldn't get sandy bucket.
Couldn't do it.
I go, so you don't want to be a sous chef? No, I so want to. I go, well, how can you hold the team to a standard that I expect when you can't do the standard yourself? Right. And they just had this epiphany and they were just like, I don't think I'm ready to be, or I'm not going to be a sous chef. And I'm like, right. You're not, because you're not ready. You don't want it bad enough. What do you think the industry consistently gets wrong about what makes a great hospitality leader?
You know, I think one initial thought on that is sometimes just reading way too much into the resume, right? Like, resumes are here. We need them. It is, you know, until something better comes along. But there's always a story behind the resume. And like we said, there's sometimes a reason that you need to suddenly leave a job or something didn't work out at a group. And, you know, when I present a candidate to a client, I get to tell their story behind the resume. And that, I think, is always really helpful because, I mean, I have resumes all the time that I'm like, oh, all right, this is rough. But then I get on the phone with these people and I meet them and we talk about things. And it's like, okay, there's something here. You just haven't been in the right kitchen, or you haven't been with the right chef, or you haven't been with the right GM. And you haven't been in a place that really, you know, has put culture at a forefront that you would respond mm-hmm. to. And I think the next part of that is training. I mean, we need to give people a chance to learn the operations before we throw them into it. And the most successful clients we have with tenures and longevity and growth are the ones that take the time to train in the beginning. And we all get it. You know, you're drowning and somebody tosses you like a stick and you grab on and you're like, okay, get in here and do this, this, and this. But like, are you doing that leader any justice by not taking the time to get them through a round? I mean, front of the house, get them in a week through the kitchen. A week in the kitchen for a front of the house manager is invaluable. You're bonding with the team. You're learning how things are done. You know, they don't have to be back there. I don't need them to like chop up onions and you know, but wash dishes. Well, they should wash dishes. But you know what I mean? Like, take that time. You never get that back to introduce someone. I think the groups that can really put a focus on training, and I think it has to be. I mean, I know it's hard. 6 weeks minimum. And that's a lot for a lot of groups. But we have most groups will do 10 to 12 weeks. But you have to train. We're not doing anybody any favors by mm-hmm. not training them on the operation. And then being like, when they fail 2 or 3 months later, it's like, oh, well, they, you know, it's like, well, did they or did we? You know, that's a big thing. I think training is a huge piece of it.
Do you go back to clients when that happens? When someone fails, you place them into a job and it's been like 2-3 months and it doesn't work out. Do you follow up with that, both the client and the candidate, to see what happened?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the goal is to not have that happen, right. But it happens, you know, and we're in the hospitality industry. Things happen. People are people. We're not always dealing with, you know, rocket scientists, but there are some times where, you know, the candidate's like, I got in there. I wasn't trained. You know, we also do a really good job of vetting our clients too, to make sure that we are putting people places they'll be successful. But yeah, I think that's something that, you know, in probably any other industry, you know, training is a non-negotiable. And I know we say we do training, but like, what does it look like? You know, what does that program look like? And you know how it is when you go to a new job and you feel welcome and you feel supported, mm-hmm. right? How many of us have walked into a restaurant and they're like, oh, you're starting today? You follow this server for lunch and you're just like, okay, like, is that how you should uh-huh. start a new job? Or, you know, you go into the kitchen and they're like, what's your name? And, you know, who are you? who hired you? We need to do a better job of making sure that our leaders are, you know, welcomed and trained and give them the tools to be successful. Like, we're, you know, that to me is a big part of that too.
100%. You have to train the staff. I can't say it enough. If you're listening and you're running a kitchen, train your staff at all levels.
Yeah.
Entry, mid-level. And to your point, managers, you go in at a high level, you still don't know that restaurant.
You don't know
You don't know the ins and outs of what they do and the nuances and the little, you know, niche things that, oh, that person, you know, has to have their peeler like this because whatever, superstition or something. And you're like, they're still productive. Don't worry about it. Just leave it be.
That's how
and,
they
you
do
know,
it.
And you come in and you're like, no, you must do this. And then they're just like, but I've been doing this for 10 years, this exact way, and no one said anything. And a lot of leaders just get set up to fail.
And we have to give ourselves time, right? Like, I'll have people that are 2 weeks in the job and they're like, I'm like, you're never going to be, I mean, you have to give yourself 3 to 6 months in a new job to even start to be comfortable, right? Like, you got to give yourself that time to learn, like on the employee end, like give yourself a chance, and you're going to make mistakes and that's okay. As long as you learn from a mistake and don't keep repeating it. But we have to give ourselves, we're in such a, instant gratification, you know, industry, but it's sometimes like we need to allow people some time to develop or just learn. And we don't do that. We're like, you either get it or you don't. You get how we do it or you're out.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay.
Yeah. What's success look like for you in year 5, you know, going into this for the agency, for your candidates, for yourself?
Yeah, this is huge. I mean, it's been like the fastest 5 years ever, but we're still getting new and exciting clients all the time. Like even in Chicago, you know, you think you know everything. What's exciting for me is the people that I've started this journey with are now like in really great positions, or, you know, I've had chefs that were like candidates that I started talking to at the beginning that now are opening their second and third restaurants in Chicago. And it's like, now I'm helping them hire people.
That's cool.
And it's like the coolest feeling. You know, it's a really gratifying job, you know, and you make a huge impact on people's lives. And that never gets old. We're really positioning ourselves for more multi-unit director, executive level jobs, which is exciting because that's like a whole, you know, as much as, you know, we love doing sous chefs and general manager, we do all that. You know, we got that. We know how to do that. Now we're positioning ourselves for a little bit more higher level, other markets. You know, right now it's so cool. We're doing an executive chef, like culinary director search for a resort in Utah, right?
That's
and,
cool.
You know, we get to do things all over the country. You know, I travel, I go to Dallas, really, you know, I oversee Texas. I'm overseeing Nashville. I get to go to Nashville and business develop. And there's so many stories of just like people I've connected with and now they're doing really cool things. And they're like, hey, like, can you help me build this now? And it's like, yeah, this is amazing. You know, we had a former executive in Chicago and he went into a new role, was in Nashville, just opened a location in Charleston. We found him a GM. Now it's Tampa. And it's like, these are all like these relationships that just start like as a conversation, like all of these things. So really excited for that. You know, and we're trying to grow the agency. We're really trying to find people that, you know, have the passion for the industry, but like we talked about, like, you know, finding that like grind and that grit and the sales aspect of that. So, you know, that's something that I'd like to really do in the next year is try to find more recruiters that are going to find this as valuable and rewarding as I do, but are also willing to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty.
They're going to have some thick skin, just like
you
in the kitchen.
You do. Yeah. So that's all the exciting things. And we just, every day is something new, you know, like we had a great call yesterday for a director of food and beverage role for something that's kind of unique to Chicago. And it's always something different. You know, yes, there's a lot of no's and there's a lot of things that you have to get through. But at the end of the day, like, we get a lot of really cool opportunities and we get to meet some of the coolest people, right? Like, I have interacted with some amazing chefs and now I'm doing it across the country, which is really exciting for me. And it all goes back, you know, it's totally full circle for me. I was telling you, you know, I worked for Marriott when I got out of college and I used to do task force, right? Like I was in my 20s, they could like send me off to anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I got a really cool opportunity. I opened the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I lived, this is crazy, 25 years old, lived in the hotel for 8 weeks. And for those of you that are like my age or older, it was like a season of Real World, right? There's like all these Marriott people. It's like the Real World, Marriott. And like you're living in the hotel. You're like working nonstop. You're out on the strip nonstop for 8 weeks. We open the hotel and I get into the elevator and I'm, you know, standing next to Jose Andreas. And I'm like,
no way.
Hey, chef. And it was my first like chef moment, right? And then who knew, like years later, here I would be like at the center of like talking to chefs every day and interacting with chefs and chefs that are opening restaurants all over the country. And I'm like, wow, who knew back then? But it was all meant to be. But yeah, it was really cool being in the Cosmopolitan. I got to do a lot of really cool stuff. But yeah, those.
Network people. I'm telling you, network. That's how we met. It was literally a mutual friend said, hey, he literally said, I got someone that dropped out last minute. Can you come to an opening? And luckily it was right here local at the Purple Pig. And I was like, yeah, dude, it's like five minutes.
So great,
it's like 5 minutes down the road. I was like, absolutely. I'll come and have do an afternoon thing. And then you were there. And then to your point, we just started talking.
Yeah.
It was a normal conversation. It's like, oh, what do you do? I was like, oh, let's have a deeper conversation.
Yeah.
And build another piece of the network. Right. Because you just never know who knows who. That 1 degree, not even the 3 degrees, the 1 degree of separation in this industry, that's kind of going to connect you to the next big thing, the next business. It doesn't matter. Like, there's so many things and so many routes that you can go. It's not just working in a restaurant.
One of the biggest things for me is the referral business, right? Like, now that I've been doing this, entering year 5, and as you see, like, obviously, I've used my social media to do that. And I am blown away with the amount of referrals I get from, you know, either people that have worked with me or people that just see me on social media, or, you know, that is the most invaluable, you know, way for me to meet people. Because, you know, if you're looking for a job and you're like, I don't even know what to do. You know, you talk to another friend in the kitchen. They're like, dude, I see this girl on Instagram. She's always like posting about jobs. Like, you should reach out to her. Or, hey, you know, Nicole got me this job, or Nicole helped my friend get her job as GM. And that is so invaluable to me, because somebody really trusts me to help somebody that they care about in a huge way that can impact their lives. So everybody that follows me on Instagram, I can't thank them enough for all that they do to help me meet other people and get connected. And same thing on the client side. You know, I've made a lot of connections and gained clients through social media. And, you know, LinkedIn works similarly. But there's something about Instagram. You know, it's amazing to me how many chefs sit on Instagram all day scrolling, but they're there. And, you know, I really appreciated everybody letting me be a part of that and a part of their network, and, you know, everybody sharing things, and it's huge. But that's another aspect of the network that I just, you know, just something I did. You know, I was like, I'm used to being on social media all the time. I did all the marketing for my old, when I was GM and events at the restaurant, and it just felt right to me. And now it's turned into something that's just incredibly special. So and it's fun, right? Like, we get to go to, I mean, Purple Pig was awesome. That was awesome. And I get to do things like that all the time. And everybody thinks that's kind of my life. Like, I'm always at restaurants and doing things, but they also see that I'm a mom and, you know, I'm with the kids and I'm with my family and that. And, you know, I hope we get to continue having fun like that, because it's been great. And I love the relationships. You know, not everybody is on LinkedIn or Indeed. You know, I recently placed a sous chef, and he was a long time, you know, he was a steakhouse guy, been with the same company for a long time. I would have never met him on LinkedIn, never met him on Indeed, but another chef introduced me, and he was, you know, one of the greatest sous chefs I've ever met, you know, and now he's really happy in his home. So it's those connections, and, you know, keep them coming, because it's amazing.
Speaking of socials, where's everyone go? They want to find you and see what you're posting, see all these jobs.
Yeah. So on Instagram, it's Find Your Niche, FindYourNiche. And then you can connect with me on LinkedIn. It's Nicole Novelli Bico. And then obviously SourceOneHospitality.com is an easy way to see me and the team. We also post jobs that we're working on. So you can actually go to our job boards and see things we're working on. And then we'll definitely get an email link out. We send out 2 email blasts a month, you know, nothing to mess with your inbox, but we send hand out jobs. So you'll know what's going on and what we're looking for, you know, twice a month with some fun content, whatever restaurants, clients we're at, events, podcasts. So, yeah.
It's invaluable. I think something simple like that newsletter, it shows people.
It's huge.
Not that you're always looking, but you just never know when something pops up and you're like, oh, it's closer to my house. Oh, that would make for a better work-life balance. And it just fits. So always keep your eyes peeled and open. So we'll put that definitely in the show notes. People want to sign up. We'll put a link to that too so people can click on that. I'd remiss if I didn't say, because you're a Chicago girl and you know this area, give the listeners, you know, they're coming, NRA's coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be looking for places. They're always, where do I go to eat? Where do I go to eat? Give three spots. It could be in the burbs. It could be in the city, but three spots that people should go check out.
Oh, like my go-tos. That's so hard because I'm gonna hurt somebody's feelings, I'm sure. But for me, if I'm in the city, I am obsessed with Mira in Bucktown. Those guys are also opening their next location, Muriella in like more downtown. So that's coming up. I love those guys. You know, I'm a big fan. If you're in the city or you're in the suburbs, I'm a Shaw's girl. So always I go to Shaw's for like a martini or apps or like a really great dinner. And then I'm personally been hanging out at the Gregory a ton in South Harrington.
Yeah, it's a great spot.
That's my new hangout that I really, you know, I think that they've done a They've filled a gap in the suburbs that was really needed, especially for the Northwest suburbs, you know, and they do such a great job with service. I mean, obviously the food's dynamite, but the fact that they're, you know, you're going in there and these guys know who you are. The owners are there. They're out on the floor. They've really set a new standard for that. And honestly, Purple Pig is got to get back to that really soon. That was stellar.
Like a lot. They're finally tapping into the suburb.
Yeah.
And realizing we can make a market. Like, you don't have to be in the city because a lot of people don't want to travel. Like, I got kids. I don't want to travel into the city.
No.
It's very difficult for me to get them to my in-laws to then take a train or go downtown, pay for parking, go eat. By the time I get back, it's a whole ordeal.
Right.
And it's like, if there was places in the burbs, and there are places, and they're more popping up, those really hip, trendy, like more upscale, you know, not necessarily fine dining, but the upscale places where it's like, I can have a really good meal, fantastic service, and I don't have to travel all the way in the city if you are in the burbs.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of chefs are starting to pull and create that dynamic out.
Yeah, Oak Brook is a force, and there's more coming.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I mean, and the great part about that is that a lot of the city groups are putting concepts out here, but you still have suburban groups. It's a great mix, and it's an easy way. Like, I'm always excited to go to Oak Brook. You know, I mean, just Oak Brook alone, I would say, you know, I love Table at Crate is a great concept.
That's a great place.
You know, I love going into like a Violi. You know, Beatrix is right there. You could do a classic like Wildfire.
There's really a lot.
You know, there's so much going on. But yeah, with the addition of Purple Pig and, you know, it's, and I know there's a few more groups like looking at that area, so it's going to be a lot of fun. But
I love it. Yeah. Nicole, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And unveiling the world of recruiting in today's crazy
and just,
world.
You know, if you, you know, I'm always a great resource just to like bounce ideas off or talk to. You know, there's a lot of people I talk to that I'll never probably get them a job, but, you know, I always want people to know that they have somebody they can talk to. And I'm always willing to introduce other people to great people. And so reach out anytime on any of those platforms.
Love it. You heard it. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, we will put that into the show notes. Go check out Insta. Go check out LinkedIn. Follow, support, like, comment. Share this with your friends, family. It always helps me out. But until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.